Saturday, April 11th, 1998. Jill S. from Navasota, Texas.
I'm Jill from College Station.
Hi, Jill.
And I didn't grow up in a big gray sheet community. I grew up with just one other person in this gray sheet group. So if I don't do things right, it's because I'm in an outpost. And, I just do what my sponsor tells me to do. You talked about control, and I think I'll qualify around control because that was the thorn in my side with gray sheet. I have a really ordinary story, but I was a binge starver all my life when the disease struck me around 13 or 14, and I managed to binge and starve my way for the next 45 years. I had a Bangladesh diet, which was a substance in water and some other substances we eat on gray sheet, and that would take off the weight that I put on from binging. And I managed to keep my weight down because I was also into men, and so I had to keep my weight down to be able to do that addiction. And so I managed to do that until I hit about 45, and I had a really serious drinking problem. And so in 1981, I knew that I had to do something about my drinking, so I joined Overeaters Anonymous, which is part of my AA story, which always gets a laugh, but that's exactly what I did, because I knew I couldn't quit drinking, but I could go on yet another diet, and that would surely solve the drinking problem. So I came into OA, and within a month, my sponsor had me in AA, because she recognized that whatever I was trying to do, I couldn't do it with tequila. And I went into AA in 1981. By the grace of God, I've been sober ever since. I just celebrated my 17th birthday in AA. So I'm a 12-step child, but I'm relatively new in Gray Sheet, and like I say, the only contact I have with Gray Sheet is my sponsor in College Station. And this new group that we started in Houston with Grania, who I think has been over here, and we now have one other absent person in Houston. So I'm really new at having so many gray sheeters around me. It's a very strange feeling. And so I just would like to tell you what happened to me and why it's so wonderful to be here with a gray sheet community. Went into OA and got a little bit of abstinence in OA, which was good for me. I made a deal with God, which is the way I always did the food addiction. So I would make deals with God. I would go back to the bargaining table with God every few years. And when I went in 1981, I told God that I would do the best I could, and that would be to control my eating. And I would control the number of times I ate. And so I said, I think I can stop eating. I'll only eat 10 times a day. And for me, at that time, that was a tremendous step because I ate all the time. I mean, there was no time. I didn't get in the car without a stash. I didn't go to work without a stash. I didn't do anything without food. I mean, I had food in my purse. I never went through a day without something in my mouth. And so to cut down to 10 times a day was really a big thing for me. And gradually, the next few years, I was able to cut down to 6 times a day eating. And I was so absolutely ecstatic to be able to only eat 6 times a day, that I felt abstinent. And I would go to meetings, and I would talk about my abstinence, and I worked the steps, and I was doing really well in OA. I became a real OA stalwart. And my sponsor at that time, who's been my sponsor all my life, was also doing well on Weight Watchers, and she used that as her abstinence. And we had a very close relationship. And I maintained a sort of a normal weight, plumpish, but that was okay. That was a bargain I was glad to make with God. Plumpish was fine. And she moved away from College Station in 1986 to New York. and I got divorced. My oldest daughter divorced me. I moved. I lost my job. I had a hysterectomy. I did just about all the stress points that you can think of, and I lost my abstinence too. And so I decided that I would take the geographic cure, that I knew that if I moved to Galveston, that I would become abstinent. For some reason, you know, it was like, oh, that'll do it. You know, that'll make me abstinent. So I moved to Galveston and had the job from hell, and I didn't get abstinent. And finally, I decided that I just would not even try to be abstinent anymore. I would just go to OA. And finally, it struck me that was a stupid thing to do. Why go to OA? You know? And so I remember the first time I went back to my stuff. I had been, you know, kind of inching around the food, but not really, not breaking my abstinence. And I went back to my stuff one day, and I remember after a few bites, I sat there and I said, I will never, ever give this up again. I must have been a fool. You know, it was, what was I thinking of? This is so wonderful. I was crazy to think that I would live the rest of my life without this. And so I went back to food in such a big way that I can't tell you. And I got way over 200 pounds. And I got really miserable. And I was fine. So it occurred to me after about 6 years of this that if I moved back to College Station, I might get abstinent. So I left my job in Galveston, and I moved back to my building in Navasota, which is right near College Station. And I went back to OA, and I told God that I was back, and I was ready to be abstinent. And God didn't do anything. God remained silent wherever God was, and nothing happened. And I really began to try to get abstinent. I went back to 6 meals a day, and that didn't work. Hmm. And then I got an OA sponsor, and she told me, "You give up the carbohydrates." So I could do that. I did that once for 3 weeks. And I did, and it was terrible. And then one time I got down on my knees and I prayed to God, please relieve me of the obsession with carbohydrates. And I got abstinent for 3 months, and I lost a little bit of weight, and I got under 200 pounds, and which was fine. I was almost ready to leave. Bargain for that. But in meanwhile, I had gotten so sick that I couldn't, my knees were giving out, and I used to have these dreams that the pillars of the temple are crumbling. And that my knees were going, and I could barely walk because I had such, I was so fat, and I had, the arthritis was getting to me and all this junk that fat people have to go through. And I couldn't, I was getting sleep apnea and I was waking up not breathing. And I was very sick. My blood pressure was sky high and I was really in bad. My doctor kept telling me that I was very sick and I needed to do something quick. And so at that point, I hadn't been able to control my eating anymore and I was baffled. And I got down on my knees and I said, you know, God, I'll be happy to be fat. I don't care. Just relieve me of this need to eat every 5 minutes. And nothing happened. And I really felt like I was being sincere. You know, I was really, really sincere, and God would not answer me. So I prayed for fat serenity. And I didn't get fat serenity. I just kept eating more and more. And I was getting back up near 200. And so I realized that it was just like my alcoholism, which I had tried to cure myself for many years. And so I got down on my knees one more time, and I said, I don't care. I think maybe that I can live without the food. You just tell me what to do now. I might consider letting go of the food if I'll die to the food. I'll die to it. I realized that what I said to God then was the same thing I said to God in 1981 when I was willing to let go of booze, is that I know that I'll never be happy again. I know I'll never smile again. I know that there will never be any joy in my life, and I don't care. Just take this away from me. I can't stand it anymore. And I went to my OA meeting a couple of days later, and they said, oh, Pat's coming back. And Pat was my old OA sponsor. And I knew that she had gotten Grace Sheet in New York. And I shook my fist at God, and I said, no, this was not what I wanted. No! And I said, "This is, you know I can't do this. This is the diet from hell. I will be in hell if you make me do this." Yeah, but I knew it was an answer to my prayer, and I knew it was a swift and speedy answer, too. And because Pat and I had never lost touch, and she had told me all these 10 years that she'd been on Grace Sheet, how happy she was and how wonderful it was, and I had thought, you know, I don't want that kind of God that's going to make me feel out of control. And we would sit in our OA meetings, you know, in our fat and talk about it. We wouldn't do that control. And so we had a special OA meeting on what we were going to do with Pat. Going to do with Pat either, because she was my old sponsor, and I knew she was thin, and I knew she did Gracie, and we all decided that we just weren't going to have anything to do with that control stuff. She was a control freak. But when she got there, I knew that God had sent her to me, and so I said, Pat, I'll help you start a Gracie meeting, but I know that I can't do that. I know that I can't do that. I'm so out of control. I can't do that. And she said, fine, now here's the Grace Sheet, and this is what we do. And she, you know how we are, I just hate this. She pulled out that stupid Grace Sheet, and she said, now this is what we do. And I looked at the Grace Sheet, and I'm like, oh, God, this is death. This is the end of my life. This is hideous. So I said, I'll do it one day, Pat. I know that I cannot do this. I've seen this many times before. I can't do this. And I said, but I will do it. She said, well, you call me in the morning, and you call me at 6:30, and you give me your food, and you write it down, and then you go out to the grocery store, and you buy the food for that day. And so I woke up the next morning, which was way too early. I mean, I was so into my food and eating and so swollen and bloated that I just didn't get up until 9 or 10 because I was so hungover every morning from carbohydrates. And to get up at 6:30 in the morning was just a hideous experience. But I did. I got up and I wrote it down and I called into her, and I knew that I couldn't do it. But for some reason or another, I did what she told me to do, and I got to the grocery store, and I bought the food for that day, and I was able to get through that day. The next day, I called her again at that ungodly hour, and I also committed food again that day. And so we had a couple of meetings, and a few other people came, and they were kind of spectators. We've had a lot of spectators in Grace Sheet. And this one other person who had been my AA sponsor for years came to the meeting, and she got it too. And so we began to weigh and measure that exception and call in our food. And my old AA sponsor did that too, but she began to make exceptions. That she decided she couldn't do this when she ate out. And she had never gotten so hideously fat and distended as I was. And she had a job that paid well, and she did well in the world, and she really didn't want to embarrass herself that way. She didn't want to. She felt it was demeaning to weigh and measure in front of other people. And I didn't have that choice because I was working for minimum wage, and I had 3 degrees, and I had a job that was so hopeless, you can't imagine. And I had tried to get better jobs, and when I would walk in the door, people's faces would fall, and I knew that I would never get a job. You know, I was just so down. And so I didn't have the choice, but one thing I did do is I didn't go out in public and weigh and measure, you know, not fat. And so I waited until I was into regular sizes. In fact, I was out of the plus sizes, and I went to Luby's one day and took my scale, my cups, and I weighed and measured in front of everybody, and they didn't die, and I didn't die, and I walked out of there feeling better. But I still thought I was a control freak. And I thought my sponsor was a control freak, and I thought that all people in Great Sheet were control freaks, but that was okay. I was willing to do that because it was working. And I woke up about two months into Gray Sheet. One day I was having supper, and I had one of our horrible vegetables. You know how we have to eat these stupid vegetables. And I had bought it fresh, and I took a bite of it, and I knew that somebody put sugar in it. And I went to the package. It was cauliflower. I'll be real frank with you, you know. And I went to the package. It was fresh cauliflower, and it was fresh. Nobody had sugared it. And I called my sponsor, and I said, I feel like somebody has sugared my cauliflower. What should I do? And she said, no, it's fresh. It's just that food begins to taste better to us after a while. And so from that point on, all my vegetables were delicious, and I couldn't wait to eat my vegetables. I mean, and I began to compare between nuked vegetables and boiled vegetables and steamed vegetables. Oh, sometimes these taste better if you nuke them, and sometimes these taste better. And so I really began to look forward to my food, and then the clarity hit me, and I thought I was going to go insane. I really thought I was going to go insane. I didn't know what to do. And for the first time since 1992, and this was 1995, I cleaned house. I didn't have anything to do. I mean, I had these endless hours between meals, so I got out the vacuum cleaner and I cleaned the place I lived, because I literally couldn't figure out what to do, and I realized that I was in deep doo-doo, because I didn't have any way to occupy the time between breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I had no resources. I had eaten. That's what I did. That was who I was. It was what I did. And between meals, I ate. I mean, this is recreational eating between meals. And so I didn't have anything to do. And so I really was crazy. And I was feeling wonderful, and I was getting thin. And I just kept doing it, and it was horrible. And so I did what I did when I sobered up. I started reading the big book, and I started watching television. And I took lots of baths, and I just did whatever it took to get to the next meal. And that's how I sobered up. I remember I used to take 3 or 4 baths a day when I was sobering up, so I started doing that on Gray Sheet. And I started watching television. It didn't matter. You know, I would watch whatever was on because it would get me to the next meal. And then one day, I went to the plush shop, and the lady met me at the door. And she essentially told me that she didn't want my kind in there. This was for people who were plus sizes, and that they didn't have anything in my size, and no need to come in. And it was like, I can live with this. This is so good. And then I came to Austin. All of my children live here in Austin. And I came to Austin, and they decided, my kids decided, let's go out and eat. I said, I have to go to some place where they have fresh vegetables, because I didn't bring backup for that. I always come with backup now. As a person who always carried bench foods in her backpack, I now carry backup and an extra scale. So I said, well, you have to go to some place where I can get fresh vegetables. And so they took me to this wonderful place that had, I told the waiter right up front, I need these steamed with nothing on them, no problem, and I need a whole bunch. And he brought me this gorgeous mound of fresh vegetables, took out my cups. I was still cupping then. I now weigh everything. And I took out my stainless steel cups and my stainless steel measuring spoons, and everything dropped to the floor. And I swear to you, everybody in that room turned and looked at me. And I picked them up, and I started weighing and measuring. Everybody was looking at me. What on earth is she doing? But by then, I was out of plus sizes. I had been cast out of plus sizes. And I was no longer the fat lady doing stupid stuff with food. I was a normal-sized woman almost. I was still plumpish. Okay. And so I weighed and measured that meal in front of my children and her, my oldest daughter's boyfriend. And that was... okay, and on the way home from Austin, I realized that this is the best thing that ever happened to me. That I was free. And I could be free as long as I weighed and measured all of my meals. And so gradually I began to go to the stores and try on petite sizes just for the hell of it. And bought clothes that were way too small for my frame. And that was okay because I was kind of playing in a field I had never been in. And I realized that one of the stories about Bill W., who started AA, was that he suffered from depression all through his sobriety. But in the last year, the depression lifted and he died without the depression. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that because I'm 62 years old. And I have been fighting this all my life, and it's not a struggle anymore. As long as I take my scale with me, I'm free. So when people in OA look at me, and they're sitting there and they're fat, and occasionally I'll go to their meeting, you know, and they'll sit there and they're fat and look at me, and it's like, no, you're the one that's in bondage. I'm the one that's free. Who's free and who's not? Who's in control and who's not? I have just a very simple thing that I offer to God every day, which is my three-way to make meals. I do what I tell God I'm going to do every day, and then I'm free. So it's not so much that I'm in control, it's just that I'm being obedient to God who gave me the grace sheet, for which I'll always be grateful, you know. So the control issue for me is now, I'm an addict. I have a food addiction that's long standing. I've tried everything in the world, and I'm free life member of Weight Watchers about 3 or 4 times. And I know from my own personal experience, I've never been so free. So when people talk about control to me, it's like, no, it's not, I'm not controlling. I'm being obedient to a discipline that's given me freedom. And my OA sponsor talks about it being a playpen. As long as I stay in the gray sheet playpen and play with the toys I have in here, I'm free. I can go out and play with the normals. I can go do anything you do. I can do anything that people outside these rooms do. It's just that 3 times a day, I have to become obedient. It's just like a monk. A monk who has to do matins and complines and vespers. I have to do my matins, complines, and vespers. Otherwise, I'm perfectly free. And I do have this freedom between meals now that I never had. But I had to get through that period of not knowing how to get through meals, through the day without, you know, between the meals. So it's just like everything else. I had to learn it, and I had to be supported in my... we now have a wonderful meeting in Houston at the OA Club at 1 o'clock on Sunday that I hope you all can make if you ever get down there. We have a meeting on College Station Saturday morning in 9 and 10 o'clock. But still, we're very small because this is not a road that many people can travel. It's for people that have really hit bottom, and it's not for everybody. If you still have alternatives, you know, you can go try Weight Watchers one more time. But I had come to the end of my addiction. I couldn't see any way clear, and so I was given this. It was a gift, and I don't look gift horses in the mouth. You know, this is a gift to me, and I obey what I'm told to do here. And by doing that, I'm free to live my life. And I do have a life. I got a raise. And I insisted that my position be redefined. And I got a better definition. So I now am able to support myself. People respect me. People have watched me weigh and measure at work. And they've been on a diet every Monday morning, and I just go weigh and measure. It's really wonderful, and they call me a control freak. Guilty as charged. Let's see. In general, I'll open up the meeting, and it says share 3 or 4 minutes. I don't have a watch, so if somebody can just do whatever needs to be done at this meeting, I, you know, whatever. So, shall we open it up to share? Is that what we do next? Anybody like to share?
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Jill.